Welcome back to another episode of Tuxedo Time, where we were Tuxedos in His Time podcast edition.
What other edition is it?
After show edition.
Heading West after show edition?
Bluebird after show edition.
Bluebird after show edition.
Also, this is our first audio only podcast. We have decided to revert back to the audio only podcast because if you've been following, we haven't posted.
In 2 years?
It's been a year.
Yeah, we're terrible people. This is more sustainable though.
Audio is way more sustainable. Like, we were just talking upstairs in the living room about something. We were like, oh my God, this would be a really good podcast based off a question that was asked on YouTube. And the fact that we could just roll down here, hit record and talk and not have to like set up all the cameras and turn on all the lights. It's just like the barrier to recording is so much less to just sit here and just record audio.
And edit a multicam shot.
Yeah. And then it's slowed down. Then I have to grade every angle.
Ugh.
So this is much easier. I'm really sorry if you're disappointed if you like the video podcast, but we think this will be more sustainable. It'll be more fun for us. We could just sit down and have a chat and not have to worry about it. And, if you want to watch our videos, you could just go over to our main channel, Becky and Chris. If you're here for the podcast only, I don't know why you would be. But
is anybody here just for the podcast and don't watch our main channel?
There will be no comment section. So how do we know? Let us know on Twitter.
Yeah.
Let us know in the comments of our most recent YouTube video.
At Becky and Chris.
Yeah. Jeez. I feel like a lot is changing this year in terms of strategy. I got to figure out, what I want to do. There's a lot of things. This is all kind of relevant to today's episode, but I kind of want to figure out what I want to do, things I don't want to do, things that, we kind of slacked on that we'd like to pick up, and things that just weren't working that we just need to chip, chip, snip, snap.
Snip, snip, cut from the team.
Yeah.
My cut from the team?
Absolutely not.
Oh, they're gonna say absolutely not.
Yeah, you're cut from the team.
Absolutely, pause. Not. Oh my God, you're cut from the team. Slovenly, slovenly beast.
Yeah. Should we just dive into this question and talk, or should we do?
Okay.
Or do you want to talk a little bit about?
No. We're going to talk. This is technically the Bluebird film after show edition.
Yeah. So why don't you give our listeners a little bit of a rundown of what Bluebird the film was?
So this is our latest film that we've released on YouTube, and essentially the plot goes as follows. We wanted to go on a snowmobiling adventure to change our perspective on winter. And we met up with a childhood friend who we've known for over 20 years, who's very into snowmobiling. And he was going to be our guide on our first foray into winter power sports.
Oh, winter power sports. Ooh. I like that. Ooh, fancy. Okay.
So that's the setup there. There are multiple things we tried to do. There are highs, there are lows. You'll just have to watch the video. But like with all of our big film projects, we try to do an after show edition of our podcast. And just to answer questions that the audience have asked that we see in the comment section.
Yeah, the after show is kind of like a series within the podcast.
Yes, it's like a sub-series, a brand within the podcast.
A brand within a podcast. So are you done that?
Yeah, I think that's probably enough. We got to tease them. I mean, they don't want to see it. They want to see what the big issue was and see all the conflicts that came up, because it was not an easy trip.
It definitely was not. It was very difficult. It was a difficult trip, and it was also very difficult to shoot.
For people who have never been on snowmobiles before.
Yep. Filming in the wintertime.
Yes.
Flipping her. If you want to watch the film, we'll leave it in the description of this podcast. I guess that's where you can find it, or on our show notes. I guess beckyandchris.com/podcast. We're bringing that back. We're going to see how it goes this year. Audio only. Back with the show notes. Mm-hmm. So I made a community post basically saying, thank you for watching Bluebird. Happy New Year. Please let us know what kind of DVD extras you'd like to see. Got a really interesting question that I thought would make a interesting discussion on this podcast.
What was the question?
I'm going to read it to you.
Okay.
Sorry, I think I need a tongue.
Clear your hole.
Let me clear my hole for a second.
Fire in the hole.
Okay. She Who Dares Wins says, would love to know how you plan and fund these mini-series videos or the film. Not sure if they're even sponsored or self-funded, but would love to know about budgeting. So basically, who pays for the miniseries and the films?
That's a loaded question, because it depends on the series.
Yes.
I don't think there's been one series that was paid for in the same way.
No, and you'll know if it's sponsored because we will disclose at the beginning that it's a sponsored video. You'll see the it's paid promotion tag there. You'll see a logo or sponsored by or something at the beginning. There'll be some sort of integration within the video that says this is sponsored by da da da. And then above the fold in the description box, you'll also get that disclosure.
So yes, if because there's Rebecca no, FTC Peckham is yes, very
anal.
Very anal about disclosures.
So if you don't see anything that says sponsored, it wasn't sponsored and it was 100% funded by us.
Yes. Bluebird was 100% funded by us.
Bluebird was 100% funded by us. These projects are massively expensive. It's not just going on a vacation because there's like a lot of other things that happen to them. Not only expensive from like doing the vacation, the flights, the hotel, the rentals, but also time. Expensive in time spent mm-hmm. on editing. When the videos aren't sponsored and I spend 7 months editing them, I don't get paid for that time.
Well, I think that's a... So, yeah, are you talking about 7 months editing Heading West?
Yeah.
Because Heading West was sponsored. Yeah,
Heading West was partially sponsored. So 2 out of 5 episodes were sponsored for Heading West, which paid for the entire series. We broke even on that, I think.
Yeah.
Which was so helpful. We're always super appreciative of brands who want to work with us on these passion projects. So, you know, they're really helpful. I lost my train of thought.
But Bluebird, on the other hand, was not sponsored. So that was 100% our own money that we paid for that.
Yeah, and I tried to get sponsors for that, but I couldn't. They're really difficult. The passion projects are really difficult to get sponsors for because they don't fall into this like traditional format, right?
They're one-offs.
Yeah.
Brands have a hard time seeing a creative's vision.
Mm-hmm.
When it's outside of a standard formula.
Yes.
So it's like, oh, it's very easy for them to say, oh, we'll sponsor an unboxing video for an unboxing channel that their audience is very familiar with unboxing. They're expecting to get sold a product. And it's like, it works great for the creator. It works great for the brand because everybody kind of knows what to expect. But yeah. Then you get this random YouTubers, Becky and Chris, who want to do this, like, they're like, hey, we're pitching you this project where we're going to fly to Newfoundland and go on a 3-day snowmobiling adventure. We've never been snowmobiling, by the way.
Yeah, this and is like, a story, but we have no idea how it's actually going to turn out.
Right, and it's hard to, when there's lots of variables, but then there's a lot of other through lines in that story. Like, it's like, okay, well, we're incorporating, like, the storyline of, we're introducing another character, Lewis.
Yeah.
Who's not part of our channel. We have to somehow make our audience like him and feel
connected
and invested in him, right?
Yeah.
And so we have to do that. So it's like a bit of a throwback to our BMX days.
Yeah.
And then we're going to make that like a through line going through with the snowmobiling and how it's like kind of an extreme sport. So it's hard to sell that to a sponsor because all at the end of the day, they just want to, as efficiently as possible, sell as many units of their goods as possible.
Yeah. And it's also a interesting thing to navigate having a sponsored video and then having a guest on that video. It's like, are you okay that we're getting paid for this? Are you okay that this is a sponsored video? This is the brand. Like that kind of relationship is weird. And so when you're doing a video that has a sponsor, but you're doing that video with another YouTuber, they understand, right? Because right. It's pretty normal. For instance, with Trent, episode 5 of Heading West was sponsored by ProMaster. We've had an ongoing relationship with ProMaster for a long time. I love them so much. They're great. But you know what, friend, I said, hey, like Trent, like this is a sponsored video. Like, is that okay with you? And he was like, yeah, I'm also making a sponsored video. Is that okay?
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, of course. In fact, I will help you with that sponsored
video.
Imagine
if we said no and expected him to be cool with just our sponsored video.
Yeah. So there's that kind of interesting aspect of it too, right? So yeah, Bluebird was 100% self-funded. That YouTube ad revenue is not like, you know, it's not a lot. It's better than a poke in the eye, but it's not like if you look at money spent, time spent, the YouTube ad revenue that comes off of those videos doesn't even touch.
Imagine that video would have to crest 2 million views in order for it to just pay for itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Based on the CPM and what.
And it is not hitting 2 million views, I can tell you that.
No, so so Bluebird's going to be, it's not going to be a break-even proposition, but it's a passion project. Mm-hmm. And we try not to look at the budget for these projects in isolation. Like, yes. It's not like every project has to be making money. we look at our channel as an aggregate, including all the one-off vlogs we do, all the sponsor videos we do, all the sponsor posts we do on social, all of the passion projects we do. And at the end of the year, the goal is to have made money.
Correct. But we also have to spend money in order to make interesting content.
Right.
So while we can sit in the studio and spend 30 minutes recording a brand friendly, we'll call it brand friendly, like a more traditional video that a brand would like to sponsor, and we could do that video and have a sponsor for it. Or we could also spend a week shooting a film every single day with no sponsor. We might take that
you're spending way more time on.
Spending way more time on, way more effort. And the cost to make that movie is significantly larger than just coming downstairs and sitting in front of the camera. But that sponsored video from just coming downstairs and sitting in front of the camera, if that video is sponsored, we take that money, right? That's our income. And then we put it into the films or the series or whatever. So all the money that we make from our sponsors, from our Amazon affiliates, from our ad revenue, it all goes back into the channel. Of course, we want to make money at the end of the day too. Like, we don't want to spend it all because that would be a bad business choice, right?
That's called a hobby.
Right. But the money has to come from somewhere to fund these projects, right? So they come from the sponsors on other videos.
Yeah. But also when you look at, like, we like to think that our audience, you guys, would not exist if it weren't for these big projects that we do. Mm-hmm. Like, the big projects are enabled. And what we think is our unique value proposition is that we can do these projects that nobody else are doing on YouTube, or that aren't doing it in the same way or the same capacity that we're doing it, because, and we're enabling, it's a means to an end. We're doing these other sponsored videos in order to fund these. Mm-hmm. And so it's a symbiotic relationship between those two things. Like, the sponsor videos need to fund the passion projects, but we wouldn't have the audience to do the money generating shorter videos if we didn't have the passion projects to bring the audience in.
Right. Well, that's really interesting that you would say that. You think that our passion projects bring the audience in more so than like the searchable tutorials?
Well,
like,
I think the passion projects allow us to have allow us longevity in our YouTube career.
And they're definitely unique.
Because it's definitely going against the grain, focusing on quality over quantity. Like, that's not a viable strategy on YouTube, most people would say.
Also, considering that it's like either a one-off project or a series where it's like completely branded differently than the rest of our channel. So there's like that consistency is also not there because it's a different design, we'll say.
Yeah, but you're a graphic designer and you make it all cohesive within our brand. So I just think that the way I look at these big passion projects is that if I'm a firm believer that if we keep doing unique things, and we always will see comments come through like, oh, wow, this is enjoyable content, very high quality for YouTube. I'm surprised it doesn't have more views.
Yeah.
And when I see those comments, it sort of is validating, because in my mind, we're making content, the type of content that I think there's a content gap on YouTube. Like, we're making the content we want to see ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we're making content that we think does not exist. But it's the catch-22. You make unique content. You have to make content to stand out. But how is it searchable if it's a new concept? You know, like, not many people are searching for flying a helicopter across the country.
Right.
Not many people are searching for three-day skidoo trip, 160 kilometers into the wilderness of Newfoundland. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're just kind of hoping that the YouTube algorithm is going to, like, show it to the right people.
Right, and that's a slow grind and a slow burn.
Yes.
Which is what we've been doing for the last 6 years.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think, like, Mozzie was kind of an outlier because we did not have a sponsor for Mozzie the film. Mm-hmm. We had sponsors for some of the DVD extras.
Yeah.
Melanote, I believe, was one. Shout out to Milano. Love them. Not sponsored, but they're deadly. But Mozzie was really interesting because we made a product ourselves and sold it. And the money that we made from our books paid for that trip and paid for some of my time to actually make that film and the book.
Right. I mean, we made money on Mozzie.
We made money
on Mozzie. We didn't lose money on Mozzie.
We made money on Mozzie from a product that we made and not from sponsors. Versus Bluebird, we have made no money from and spent a lot of money on.
And a lot of time. Yeah.
And then Heading West was broken even by sponsors. So all of them are different.
Yeah. But I think Bluebird, like, while it maybe was the most in the hole for a lot of these projects we've done, I do think that it was a story that we were very passionate about.
Definitely.
It was a trip that we've always wanted to try. And then being able to do it with a childhood friend, I think that was a very special element. So you and I were both very okay with funding this completely ourselves.
Most of the time, the passion projects and series, we are okay with funding, no matter how much they cost, because they mean something.
Yeah. And also, too, a lot of the projects that do end up getting sponsors, we have already planned to do them, mm-hmm. regardless if sponsors come through or not.
Yes.
So sometimes we get sponsors for them at the almost like seemingly last minute, mm-hmm. and sometimes we don't.
Yeah.
And it just, it is what it is. We just kind of have to trust the, like, put faith in the system, trust the process, mm-hmm. and just do it and hope that someone signs on to make it at least a break-even proposition. But I'm not saying all of our big passion projects lose money.
No.
But generally speaking, at the end of the year, we're just, the goal is to have more money in the accounts than we started with.
Yeah, but also be after enjoying your time as well and yes. make stuff that we want to make.
And having a sustainable career out of it too, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're making a decent living doing it. And it's just another way we diversify our income streams between the two of us too.
Yeah. It's funny, there's sometimes where I'm making certain pieces of content that I know is going to, like, you know, grow a channel or bring in new viewers. And I'm like, this is a waste of time. I should be working on something like Bluebird.
Something
I want to work on. Whereas, like, oh no, hang on. Like, this other stuff is like a better brand builder.
That's the cruel existence of an artist though.
It is. You said something really interesting to me earlier about the series and films being a loss leader. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, that's how I kind of always viewed our big passion projects, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I guess a loss leader would be, you know, if a store sells a bunch of goods and they want to bring in a lot of customers, so they put one item on super sale, even though it's going to lose them money, knowing that it's going to bring in patrons to come into the store, buy that one item on super sale. But then while they're there, they'll be like, oh, well, I need to get this, this, and this. And so having the audience there, or having the customer there buying other things, eventually, even though they're losing money on that one product, they'll actually in the long run or overall make money because they've sold other products. So I feel like that's how I've kind of always viewed our passion projects. They're a little bit of a loss leader. Like, yeah, if we only did these big films, we would not make money. We might break even because some of them are sponsored, and overall we probably would break even, just not make any money. But having audience come for that content, and then they, oh, well, I'm curious about the behind the scenes. I'm going to watch the behind the scenes, what's in my camera bag for whatever project we did. And then it's very easy to integrate a sponsor into those videos because there's lots of products and people are expecting to see a product heavy video. So those ones are very nice to integrate, you know, especially camera companies and accessory companies and mm-hmm. bags and whatnot. So that's kind of a move we've done in the past on multiple occasions.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting to think about the oranges being the films and then like the rest of the things in the store being like the tutorials and the things, because I think of it as almost the opposite. Mm-hmm. I do agree that it's a loss leader.
It's like the gas at, like, when Costco sells gas for super cheap.
Yeah.
It's like they probably aren't making a ton of money on it, but they're not just selling gas. The people are coming and buying all the groceries in bulk.
It's funny because I feel like a lot of the new audience come from the more traditional style videos, and then they just happen to see, you know, if they like decide that they like us or like to watch us, then they're more willing to watch the films.
And that might be the case. You're probably more plugged in with the analytics than I am. I don't really pay attention to it a lot.
I try not to look too much. I look enough, you know, but to be okay, you know, but not enough to be able to really for sure say. But it, you know, if you look at like view count alone, it seems like outside of the films and specifically Heading West, because that was our best performing series, I think, so far. But like, if you look at view count, it's like, what's in my camera bag? And like the studio tour and like those traditional like style videos do the best.
But traditional for us, because we started off kind of in a film video niche, and a lot of our seed audience from the beginning.
Our seed?
Our seed audience. Like kind of like
seed the audience. Yeah, not your seed.
Seed pause audience. A lot of our first people that we started off when we started doing video tutorials,
yeah,
you know, vlogs and video tutorials is what we started doing. Those were our two kind of pillars.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of changed since then, but that was always sort of founded in the photo video realm.
Yeah.
So I think our audience is always going to have a bias towards those videos.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think those are interesting to where like they bring in a little bit of a new audience or more searchable than the films. But you know, some of the tutorial style videos, I don't like, if y'all watch our channel, you'll probably have noticed that we haven't posted like an editing tutorial in like 2 years. Or like, here's how to edit a photo or edit a video or like tips and tricks on how to, like, it's mostly like, here's how I plan my videos, or this is my studio tour, or this is what's in my kit. It's because I hate making tutorials. The unfortunate part is that those types of videos really pay the bills.
They do, and they can, but also you run the risk of morphing your, training your audience, or you're growing an audience who are coming for those types of videos. So right. Then when you drop a, you know, 3-day skidoo trip to whatever, they're going to be like, what the hell is this? This is out of left field. They're not right. Going to expect it. So I agree that like those videos are probably more in line with traditional what's expected on YouTube, but it's again, going back to the content that we want to make versus what we don't want to make. And if they're the bane of your existence doing tutorials, then absolutely it's not a sustainable career.
Yeah, no, I really hate them. I do really like talking about kits though.
But yeah, that's true. You love an organized kit.
I do. But I do feel like YouTube is changing, where I feel like a couple of years ago unboxings were like really big and I don't feel like they're as hot anymore. I've been seeing from like my algorithm a massive, and probably because I'm making the type of stuff that I like to watch, but I'm seeing a lot of long form videos, like 40-minute videos, series, films, like things like that. Like yeah. I'm seeing a massive shift to that versus like, here's an unboxing. Like, though, this is the thing I got, you know? It's interesting to see like how it's almost like where vlogs were popular, then everyone got into shooting like slow motion B-roll cinematic montages, and now like stories really big.
Yeah, I think too though, you gotta take that with a grain of salt, because YouTube is such a large conglomerate that like us trying to comment on trends from our narrow, mm-hmm. highly curated, algorithmic fed yeah. viewpoint.
Yeah, I know.
Like you talk to somebody who's really into like, you know, race cars, and all they're gonna see is just probably F1 content. Mm-hmm. You talk to somebody who's really into, you know, certain sports, all they're going to see is highlight reels from football games. So it's probably, you're probably seeing that because that's what you want to see.
Yeah, it's definitely what I'm seeking out for sure.
But and I will tell you, sorry, keep going.
Oh no, you go ahead.
What I will tell you though is a trend that I've seen that I think might transcend silos is that products always sell. People love to get into hobbies and they get infatuated with the gear of that hobby. So
that's so true.
So whether it's like why 8 out of 10 photography video shot, I would probably say why 99% of photo video content somehow focuses on gear and not on the process of shooting photos. Like yes. Thomas Heaton is an anomaly.
Yes.
He does like, Thomas Heaton is a channel where that you like to watch, where he goes out and he takes the viewer on like a photo excursion. He talks about how he's shooting the photo. He talks about his settings. Yeah, he's got his gear there. You can see plain as day what cameras he's using.
But he doesn't do like, what's in my camera bag, or like any gear
but
videos.
It's not a gear centric. It's a photography experience, not a gear centric experience. Whereas majority of photo video stuff, it's like, what's the newest product? Because people just love gear. It's that same with probably the camping industry, I would imagine.
Yeah. So I have two things to say, because It's really interesting that you bring that up. First of all, going back to Thomas Heaton, his channel is an anomaly. It's so interesting because his channel looks like a really healthy channel. I love watching it. I don't watch a lot of photo video content because I don't like watching photo video gear videos. But I like watching Thomas because he's like, I'm in my van that's like converted to a camper, and I'm going to go out for like a little excursion.
And here's what I'm eating.
And I'm making my coffee, and I'm making chicken. Now I'm up for sunrise, and I'm shooting this photo, and like, oh, I like this and don't like this. And he's talking about his composition and showing his images. It's about the creative process and the adventure, and it's not about the gear. I hate watching camera gear videos. Mm. However, for a long time, I was like, I don't want to really make a lot of camera gear videos. I don't like watching them. I don't understand why people are so obsessed with gear.
People love gear.
Until I started camping. And then I started watching, and now I'm like, I can't get enough.
Gear whore.
Overlanding videos. Show me like your entire kit. Show me your galley. What are you using for kitchen? How are you doing your water? Like,
interesting.
What kind of cargo boxes are you using? What bed rack are you using? Are you using a camper system with a rooftop tent? Are you using like a bed rack with a rooftop tent? Do you have a lift? What kind of tires? Are you using mud trains, all trains? Like, give me the gear list. And then like, to shift to camping, like that's just overlanding camping. Like, how are you transporting your things? Like, what's in your fire making kit? What, how are you packing your bags? Like, how are you organizing your sleep system? What, and then into the backpacking style stuff, what sleep system are you using? What's like the what lightest ultralight tent? System. You know what I mean? Like, and I can't get enough, Chris. I cannot get enough.
That's funny.
I like the other day I got served a video and it was a holiday gift guide. And it was like the ultimate holiday gift guide for men. Watch this if you want to make your man happy for Christmas or something like that, whatever it was. And I was like, all right, bye. So I turned it on and I was like, oh, I'm a man. Like everything they talked about, I was like, yes.
You were excited about all the quote unquote man items?
Man items. Yeah, I was on Amazon buying it, right? Like, or writing it down. I was like, oh, I could use that. And it's like this notebook and and I was like, oh my God.
But so here's my theory on why this all is.
Okay.
It's because YouTube is driven, it's a free quote unquote service that's driven by ad revenue. And essentially, it's founded in capitalism.
Oh, shit, yeah.
And basically, people in North American society, we are just consumers. We're consumer whores, basically,
yeah.
Who just consume, and are always buying stuff.
Yeah, I don't give a shit about buying the latest lens or camera.
Right.
But like, oh my God.
All the stuff that's coming to the door.
It's all camping stuff.
It's all camping stuff that you just are like.
Truck stuff.
Just hoarding into your little kits and stuff.
Oh, I need a cargo net for my backseat. Yeah, definitely. I definitely need that.
Just for mini like shovel. Editor's context or for audience context here. She has so much gear.
Stop.
So much camping gear. Oh, no. She forgets that she's already bought that thing and will buy it again. Or she'll buy something and be like, what did I buy this for again? I have no idea what this is.
Well, sometimes I'll go on like a blackout at like 11 o'clock at night. And I'll wake up like straight up in the bed and I'm like, oh my God, I have an idea on how I can like store
rig
this stuff, but I
up.
Don't know if it's going to work. And then I order some stuff off Amazon and like
it's very specific, like net or like very specific box for something. And all of a sudden shows up. You're like, I have no idea what I ordered this for.
It's so bad, Chris, that I have like a helicopter camping kit that's like small. Then I have a car camping kit and then I have a tent camping
kit. So the running joke in our relationship was that Becky has more tents than the time she's been camping.
Oh, fuck off. That's not true now.
It's not true now.
That's not true now, but it was true for a while. I had 3 tents and we had been camping like 3 times. But now I've been camping so many times I can't even count.
Yes, but that's, it was funny though. I just found it funny. But that's the thing, right?
True.
And you are not the only person. In fact, I'd say that you're the rule rather than the exception. Like most people probably who are into blank hobby, whatever it may be, there's a large level of consumerism that occupies being into that hobby. And then there's in turn a reflection of that on YouTube, a large percentage of content that's not pure, whatever that hobby is. It's pure consumerism.
Yeah, anyway, for sure. And that's really interesting.
But also like you're thinking like YouTube can only exist with ad revenue.
Yeah.
So, and creators can only create when they're selling products. So of course all the content is going to be centered on products. How could it not be?
But also think about this. You're in the market for something and you're going to do research. Nobody's reading anything. You're going to go straight to Google. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense for us as YouTubers to make content about the things that we use and love as a review, because obviously it brings an audience and brings in reviews, but the audience would rather watch a video and see what your experience was with the thing.
Yes. This is the tweet, the corporate America handshake. Entertainment America.
Oh, well, now I kind of feel really bad about myself.
You shouldn't feel bad about yourself.
As we sit here in the room with my rooftop tent sitting on the floor.
She's got no room for a rooftop tent, so it has to take over our podcast studio. Part of the reason why we're not filming this.
Well, I think that was really interesting. I think we kind of answered the question, who pays for the miniseries and the films?
We do, asterisk.
And sometimes sponsors.
Yes.
It is difficult to get sponsors for the big projects.
It's not an easy category. They can just say, oh, this is the video. I understand the concept. You're going to unbox it. You're going to sell it to your audience easily.
Yes. But I've seen a lot of talk about like product placement over the last year. People wanting to move from like the traditional integration or dedicated style video to quote unquote product placement.
Bring it on.
So like one would think, like I could think of like 10 sponsors off the top of my head that would have been perfect for Bluebird. But some people will watch a YouTube video and just assume that it's sponsored, even though nowhere it says it's sponsored. They assume that like
the audience has been trained.
Yeah.
10 years ago, it was the opposite though. Remember?
Yeah.
When people didn't realize that things were sponsored, they had no idea that there was money being made or exchanging hands for these things.
Right.
Partly because the creators didn't really adhere to FTC guidelines.
And people haven't really been doing a good job of that either.
I still see lots of content where I'm like, is Is like, this sponsored? This is a sponsored video.
I feel like that's why I get a little bit put off when somebody asks whether it's sponsored or not, because I feel like I pride myself on like heavily disclosing
yes
when something is sponsored. And I always say that like, you will know if it's sponsored because I will tell you 100 times. It will be everywhere. It will yes. be tagged. It will be.
Right. And then you see people who just post stuff online and just don't leave any disclosure. And for those people, it kind of makes a bad name for people who are following the rules.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's it. But anyway, I thought that was an interesting conversation. I think that our audio podcasts should be between 30 and 40 minutes.
Well, we're 31 minutes now, so.
I hope you're not too disappointed that we're moving to audio only, but this means I think that we'll be able to bring you a lot more podcasts.
There wasn't a choice because sustainability is sustainability, so.
At a certain point, you have to make decisions based off of what works for you.
Anyway. All right.
Okay. Well, thank you guys so much for listening and we'll see you next. Are we still going to do like we were doing like one every second week? I think that we could probably try for every second week.
Okay. Sounds good. So we will see you guys in the next one. Bye.
Bye.